If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
As a Democrat in the Missouri General Assembly, Rasheen Aldridge almost always found himself on defense. Now, as part of a growing progressive bloc at the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, he says he finally feels like he can get stuff done. The 14th Ward Alderman joins us next on the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Let's hit the music.
This is Politically Speaking, the definitive show about politics in the St. Louis region.
I thought this was an opportunity to have a new voice in that seat.
And the decisions I make in county government allows me to help people in large groups, and I enjoy it.
We're not using it as a wedge issue. We're using it more as a, you know, what's right for the region conversation.
We need to know what the issues are in our communities in order to address them.
Because people want to see change, and they want to see a St. Louis that works for everyone.
Some days I need the credit, most days I don't. But most importantly, I have to be able to control how this environment is going to evolve.
We knew that in races that have multiple candidates, the only way you win is in the streets.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, Rachel Lippman. Joining me in studio today is
Jason Rosenbaum.
And our guest today on the podcast is
Alderman Rasheen Aldridge.
Now, depending on when you first became aware of, involved of, tuned into St. Louis politics, you're going to know Rasheen from a bunch of different roles. He was an activist for Show Me 15, increasing the minimum wage. He was then a state lawmaker and is now an alderman. What's the biggest difference between Jefferson City and City Hall?
Ooh, there is a major difference. One, I will say I actually love going to work every day. It's not that I didn't enjoy going to the state capitol, but, I feel like I can actually effectively get stuff done. And as you guys know, the makeup in Jeff City is really hard for a Democrat. We play defense, and there's a lot of us up there where we can negotiate to get stuff done. But, you know, I think the activist side of me over the last 4 years is just being in the state house. You know, for me getting involved was really after the death of Mike Brown and just seeing how we needed local people to really do things for constituents and be like a voice to help educate and move them throughout the process. So I felt like while I was to some extent able to do that on a state level, it's nothing like they say like local politics. Local politics matter. So being able to be home every day, which the calls are a lot more heavier, constituent calls, they call you about everything, but it's more of a joy to be able to, I call it the three E's, educate, engage, and empower people, especially in the war that I got, to be able to help them get to a spot that they're not and also move the community forward.
For those who may not be as familiar with the new map, including me, 14th Ward is roughly where?
Yeah, so from end to end, it starts like roughly right at City Hall. So Spruce Street, as you continue to go north, it takes in neighborhoods from downtown, downtown west, Carr Square. It takes in Hyde Park, a little bit of Jeff Vanderloo, a little bit of Fairground, and then a little bit of College Hill, all the way up to 70 Adelaide. So it's a real diverse ward.
And how did that roughly kind of correspond to the boundaries of your old 70? Well, I know the boundaries changed, but your old 78th district.
Yeah, I mean, the 78th also was very similar because it went as far up to about Hyde Park. It didn't go all the way to 70 Adelaide, but it went as far south to Cherokee Street. So it had everything in between when you talk about diversity, you talk about economic diversity. You know, downtown is a lot more economically power, maybe compared to North St. Louis or to Cherokee Street. So it's still a very diverse ward that I like kind of represent on the state level.
Architecturally speaking, is City Hall or the State House the more impressive building?
Well, since we don't have AC in the chamber, I will always take that in the summertime. I think they're both beautiful buildings. I think they both have their own kind of touch about them that just makes them a beautiful place. But I really did enjoy walking the Capitol halls late at night when everyone was gone, like 7, 8 o'clock, and just being able to look on the walls to see other representatives. It's a beautiful building.
That stained glass in the House chamber, too, is always one of the most impressive features.
Yeah, when it gets dark and you can just look up when they're talking about who knows what because they're filibustering, you just look up at the stained glass and it's like, wow. This is a beautiful place. It's such an honor to be an elected official.
I agree with you. It's the state capitol, no contest, especially since the outside of City Hall is permanently damaged by pollution.
By coal pollution, yeah.
Now, do you think the fact that your current job of alderman now pays significantly more than being a state legislator. Do you think that more people who are serving in the legislature will run for alderman in the future?
I think so. I think more people in the state legislature will run, but I think also it opens up a pool of high caliber people that could run for these seats. I know I said that on the first day, and some of the previous alder people that was there or still there and that was there before took it as a shade. But I just think, you know, public service is I think people don't go into it for the money. Maybe some people do. But, you know, the amount of work that you do when you're a state legislator, being gone for several months from your family, driving up and down and only getting paid $35,000. Same at the Board of Aldermen. You know, when people are trying to provide a family, if they have a family, it's like, can I really do this? Also, the time that it's going to take and the little pay that it gets. So I think there'll be more people moving to that.
What do you think your state experience will bring to the Board of Aldermen? I mean, we could look at St. Louis County as an example, which has been kind of a mixed blessing where you have former legislators like Sam Page, Jake Zimmerman, and Rita Days there. Depending on whether you like them or not, you could say that that experience was good. But I mean, honestly, I don't know if the experience really correlates with your current job. It seems markedly different. So what's your thought about that?
Yeah, I would say first, you know, it was being able to know the rules was a big thing, you know, going into it and being a new alder person and trying to figure out what do I say on the floor. It can be scary. So with having that run on the state floor and, you know, the decorum in the state level is way different from what we do down at the board. They don't play around.
Different better or different?
Different, more aggressive. You know, if you step out of order on the state level, and President Green has been doing a good job at this, but if you step out of order, you know, they have parliamentarian, they have a whole nonpartisan team of people that make sure that what you say is actually correct, and you just can't go and ramble off and sometimes just say whatever you want to. But I would say between the learning the decorum, but also one thing that the state taught me that I'm looking forward to bringing back, I feel like now we're in the second second quarter at the Board of Aldermen. The first quarter was a little intense because, you know, we had new people coming in and people were pointing their fingers. But being able to work with folks across the aisle, notice all Democrats, but we have different views and opinion on issues. And that's one thing I had to learn in the state house. Being a Democrat is being able to go across the aisle, listen and figure out where is that medium that we can meet in to actually get the goal that we want to accomplish. So I think really that negotiation and building relationships that I learned on a state level is going to be able to help me even in a city full of Democrats, which we don't always agree. You got different levels of progressives, moderates, whatever they want to call, but we're all in between.
Anyone who has watched the Board of Aldermen knows that y'all don't agree on issues.
We're getting better.
That's true.
I do. I
that
like
is
it's
true.
Getting better.
One of the things that has been really kind of dominating the city news lately, political, et cetera, are the issues at the City Justice Center downtown, directly across from City Hall. You and other members of the Public Safety Committee went on a tour of the jail kind of right before this recent spate of issues. You've had inmate deaths, a hostage taking. As you kind of look back on that visit, in hindsight, do you guys think you missed anything or didn't ask the right questions? Or
I will say first, I'm so glad to serve on the committee with everybody, but especially to serve with Alderwoman Sonia and Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. All three of us come out of Ferguson, and I think we just have a different view of how we look at injustices in our city. And when the detention facility oversight came in front of the committee previous before we went in, I know three of us took this very serious, as well as the chairman, Brett Narayan. But after seeing that video that circulated on Twitter of inmates getting maced and just being abused for no reason, it was like, we have to act and do something. I definitely wish that we communicate a little bit more with the detention facility oversight to just be clear of what we need to see. We was hearing a lot of rumblings of what's a problem, like the holding cell or the lock still not being fixed. But it would have been good to really dive into having a conversation with them on what we need to check out in the facility. I feel like that could have been an opportunity where we could have just potentially held the commissioner more accountable. But we'll say there's some legislation I'm working on that will be filed this week that will, as I've been meeting with the Detention Facility Oversight Board and the president, to actually hopefully address some of their concerns of why they haven't been able to get in.
Do you think there is enough support? And if I'm remembering correctly from, you know, the conversations members of the board have had, it's among them making it easier to get outside counsel to help them move stuff along. Is there support among your colleagues and, most importantly, Room 200, the mayor's office, to get that all to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, I know every person on public safety. When we had that committee hearing with the DFOB, everyone from even Tom, Alderman Oldenburg, Alderwoman Keyes, and Clark Hubbard all agreed that we needed to do something. We recently put out a statement that myself and Alderwoman Saunier kind of was charged with, or we was going to do anyway, but we was like, let's open it up to all our public safety committee members, and they all agreed on the statement of, like, something needs to happen. There's action. There's too many deaths happening in these facilities, especially back-to-back and a hostage situation. So I'm very confident members who are not on public safety also will support the legislation, as I've spoke with them. And I'm not sure what Room 200 is going to do. I've let the mayor know that this is coming down a pipeline. I do believe she wants more transparency, and I think that's what, you know, is really coming down to transparency. And the city councilor, who has kind of been stalling things, I don't know where she'll fall in that because they're a cabinet member, but, you know, we got to do what's right to actually move this board forward.
Is public safety a majority of the board members? Like, could the members of public safety alone get the bill across at least the initial finish line? I think it's
about seven of us.
Yeah, so you just need the president.
Yeah,
there you go.
And I think we got the president on board. But yeah, I think public safety could. And I know there's Alderwoman Kara Spencer. This is something that she said she cares about and, you know, really want to dive into and look into. So I think we'll have more than even majority.
What do you think is driving the current issues at the jail?
From what I'm hearing, I just feel like it's a inhumane spot. You know, I'm hearing that inmates, I don't want to call them detainees because they are innocent to proven guilty, but inmates have, even when we spoke with the commissioner, I know they're understaffed, which I think is also part of the issue that's happening, is it's a lack of staff, but they really don't get out of their pods a lot. You know, they are on, if not technically locked down, by saying lockdown, they're on lockdown because they don't get out of their pods. They can't go out and just have rec time. They're like in their pods. They probably get out like in 2 hours throughout the whole day. And hearing from some inmates is that they're in even longer weeks without showering. So I think, you know, all this is just, it's been a buildup. It's a buildup of why are we being treated so horribly and we haven't even been, pled guilty or haven't been sentenced to anything yet.
If recruitment is one of the issues, getting staff on there, retaining them, what needs to be done and how do you balance that with all of the other needs for raises for all the other city employees and retention in all of the other city offices?
Yeah, so I'm having conversations with Paul Payne, the budget director, to figure out where is some of the fat in the budget that we can cut. Because I do think, and I commend the mayor, she's been doing 3% raises over these last few years to try to get city employees up. But there is, you know, one thing I noticed with being on budget, just not on a state level, but here locally, is, you know, locally we've been allocating a lot of dollars to certain departments. And I can just say, like, the police department. And what we're seeing is a lot of that money at the end of the year is just going back in general revenue. So how can we strategically, you know, use funds that are actually going to be utilized to, in my opinion, I think, recruit and maintain correctional officers, which we haven't been able to because we're not paying them enough and we're not really giving that budget item enough attention like we always look at. When we talk about public safety, it goes straight to policing.
Do you know what the starting salary for a corrections officer is?
I do not. I think I want to say probably 35, if not 40.
It was also shocking to me that the individual who was taken hostage in this was a gentleman in his 70s. I can't imagine at 70, you know, wanting to or he probably needed to do the work or thought he could help, but just being 70 in that situation for that little money is I won't say it makes my brain hurt, but it doesn't seem like an ideal situation really for anyone.
But if you're allocating more money for corrections, why aren't they raising the starting salary? Like what, and maybe I don't know what the process is for that, but that's not enough money to recruit somebody to work at the St. Louis jail.
Not at all. And I know the 3% raises have been going into effect, but hopefully when the salaries increase, or if we can find money to increase them, that would get people that's not in their 7 years old. You know, when I heard that the hostage was 70, and I'm not, you know, trying to age discriminate, but there's, you know, some jobs that, you know, the city have so many open jobs right now, that maybe we could have found him a spot somewhere else that wasn't probably as dangerous, especially for his age and the part of where he is in his life. But it shocked me too when it was like the 70-year-old hostage. You know, he was a 70-year-old worker that, you know, was taken hostage. It's like, well, could we found a different job in the city for him? Because there's so many jobs. Maybe, you know, at some point there should be a limit of what that health or physical fitness should be, especially when you're dealing with inmates that are, again, on lockdown for so long. And if they get out their pods, you know, it's going to explode.
Do you agree with the demands for Corrections Commissioner Jennifer Clemons Abdullah to resign?
I definitely think we need to take a look at that leadership position. I think she is trying her best, but I do think that maybe she's a little over her head. You know, this is several incidents have happened under her time. And at some point, yes, you know, it's some accountability on the lack of resources, but I think it also goes back to the head. You know, if it's a commissioner or a director, I do believe that there needs to be new leadership in that position. I don't want to go far as say resign. I guess I am saying resign if I say new leadership. But
yeah, it seems like you
saying
yes. Yeah. I'm just not saying the resign thing. I do think there needs to be new leadership. The fear is that you get new leadership and it's just as worse.
Well, yeah, because we've seen that in St. Louis County. There have been how many directors of the jail in the last few years?
But I think you could also argue that leadership has seemed to be able to get it moving in a different direction. That, you know, that County Executive Sam Page managed to get the correct people in that job to get that jail moving in what after, seems to be,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
Kind of.
After getting it wrong a couple of times.
Yeah, they seem
I think
to be getting
to be
it
pointed out.
Yeah. Correct.
But I think,
correct.
I think that's part of the process. And I agree. I think, you know, the county, they did go through, I want to say, like maybe three jail commissioners at the time when things was going on.
It was like 5 in 3 years or something like that. It was some like large number in a short period of time.
Yeah, well, what I will say is what's happening under the current commissioner is not working, so we need to be looking for other commissioners that probably can do the job better.
I want to move on to the next topic, which is guns, because last month Mayor Jones said that she would support a host of local gun control efforts, and I'm quoting here from news reports, including prohibiting military-grade weapons, preventing the sale or transfer of guns to minors, prohibiting, quote, insurrectionists and those convicted of hate crimes from having guns. What do you think the prospects for these ideas are to pass the Board of Aldermen?
Well, also just this past Saturday, while Local Progress was here and several of the Board of Aldermen members are part of Local Progress, including the president, we also announced some more slew of gun bills, one that I'll be filing tomorrow. I think they'll get done at the board. You know, it's about honestly sending a message to Jefferson City that, you know, we deserve to have local control around these issues. We're not trying to, you know, stop guns. You know, it's more about how do we have responsible gun ownership. And being in Jefferson City, anytime you say anything about guns, it's like a non-starter with a lot of my former colleagues up there, and they think you want to take away their gun. It's like, no, there's a difference between gun control in rural Missouri and urban Missouri. And I think these board bills, you know, have the potential to get across the finish line, and we'll see what Jeff City do when we pass them.
Is that how the board should be spending its time, given the potential legal challenges these are likely going to face, and probably even Jefferson City coming in and closing the loopholes, the nooks, the crannies, et cetera, that the city is trying to work in?
I think it is. I think a lot of people, especially in the areas that I represent, no matter if it's downtown or North St. Louis, the issue when it comes to guns is always the same, is that we need to do something about guns. You know, I don't feel safe. We have such these lax gun laws, which we know is, you know, from the state of Missouri. But I think it's going to send a message that regardless, you know, we're rallying up our people in the city of St. Louis. It's almost kind of like the organizer in me. We're rallying up the people in the city of St. Louis to say, hey, we do care about doing stuff around these issues, because a lot of time I think citizens believe, you know, we don't want to do anything. And we do, even though our hands are tied, but we're going to take the fight to Jeff City.
So let's just say that the things I just described.
Plus what you're mentioning that
what
you want to
introduce.
Yeah.
Survive a legal challenge. And correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, I may be reading municipal ordinance violations wrong. Wouldn't the maximum penalty for violating any of these be financial in nature? I don't think the city could jail somebody for having an AK-47, correct?
Correct. I do think that, and that's something that we have to look at also with the ordinance to see if we could change. And I'm not a fan of strengthening penalties on individuals. But even with Alderwoman Kara Spencer bill, we did figure that out, that the most you can do was, you know, $35. But what we also figured out is you can also confiscate the gun. So you could take the gun out of the hand of the person. So while you may not be able to arrest them, you could at least do other actions of taking the firearm away from them. Maybe they just go purchase another one, but there'll be one big militarized machine off the streets.
You mentioned Alderwoman Spencer's bill, which essentially banned the open carrying of weapons by minors. And you were among a group of the Board of Aldermen who were initially skeptical of that piece of legislation. What enabled you to get to a point where you were able to vote for it? Because that came out, I think, almost unanimously or unanimously.
Yeah, it came out, as I say, at the Board of Aldermen in bank. So everyone was like automatically co-sponsored on it. As we're talking about guns and how we need to do stuff around guns, I will also say, you know, myself and other Alder people are very critical of making sure that we're not giving more power to just enforcement and criminalizing people. And that was the issue with Alderwoman Spencer's bill. You know, good idea. You know, people walking down the street in all our neighborhoods with, you know, guns out. But who is that going to affect? And that was one of my concerns. You know, it gave me stop and frisk vibes, even though city councilor said that it won't do that. But it's still the, you know, the intention of the bill may be good, but how is it going to be executed? So I got to give credit to Alderwoman Spencer. You know, we held our feet to the fire and was like, we cannot pass this the way that it's standing unless there's some type of meet in the middle. And we was able to do the Right to Know bill, which I end up sponsoring, which as we were giving police officers more tools to try to address the needs in the city, we also understand that there's a group of people in the city that still feel like they can't trust law enforcement. So what the Right to Know bill did was bring some transparency within the police department. And I know that this board, some of us are a big believer, if we're going to do enforcement, we have to do transparency. We can't give one group too much power, especially being the city after what happened, not in this city, but the region of Ferguson. Like, we have a responsibility to look at these issues in an equitable way. And I think originally her bill didn't pass an equitable sniff test, but she was able to work with our colleagues to say, hey, let's compromise. And we had two companion bills that moved at the same time.
What do you think that sequence and series of events portends for legislating in the future at the Board of Aldermen?
I think it shows that we can negotiate, and that when these hard issues happen in the past, when I used to look at the board, we don't have to air it out on the floor like a WWE match, that we can go in our little small offices that we have and be able to say, hey, look, I got a issue with it just from a different place that I come from in life. And I'm not trying to stop your bill, but how do we work together to get it to a spot that works for everybody? Because I may have an idea that may work for Carr Square, but it may not work for the Hill area where Joe Vollmer, Alderman Vollmer is. So I think it showed that, you know, we were able to, because our bill didn't move for a very long time until we had those conversations and came up with a companion bill. And then even when mine's lost suspension of the ruse, you know, she put hers on the informal calendar to show that we're moving these together. So I think it showed that the Board of Aldermen is not in the past. We're willing to negotiate and work together.
How much do you think any of that initial opposition was driven by the fact that Spencer may run again for mayor in 2025?
So a lot of people looked at me and Alderwoman Sonier and Alderwoman Danielle Velasquez as being in opposition of it. It's funny you bring that up, thinking that we were just mayor allies and puppets, and that's why we wasn't passing it. And at the end of the day, I've supported the mayor several times, but, you know, I'm my own person, and I think all of us new Alder people are trying to make it very clear. We believe similar issues as the president and the mayor, but we're not just someone who can, you know, you can just expect to vote from. So our opposition literally was that, you know, conversations wasn't had about this legislation beforehand. You know, we all looked at it in a way that how would this affect people, honestly, black and brown, seeing that those are the individuals that have been carrying these guns. What does that look like for, like you say, the enforcement? Will they be getting criminalized? Will they be getting punished? But also, what does that look like for our safety, for us officers and a person carrying that gun who may be young, emotionally driven, if a police come up to them and say, hey, do you have a open carry permit? So it was truly off of, we were skeptical of the bill and those conversations didn't happen, and we needed to have several conversations, like Rachel said, from 29 to 82 to make sure we get it in a right spot and not just doing emotional legislation.
As we get closer to 24-25 election season at the board, how do you think it may start playing out in legislating? Because we know in election years at the state level, you sometimes get some crazy legislation and crazy alliances and all that stuff. How do you think it's going to play out at the board?
I expect people to probably file legislation around their values to make sure that they let their constituents know what they're doing. I don't think it would be as crazy as it is on the state level. And I will say on the state level, each session it's getting crazy and crazier because it's like you have to get elected to be crazy and crazy, especially on the right side. But on the left side, I think, and what I've been seeing is a lot of the older people are already doing the work. I can speak for us new ones that have recently came in. You know, we're holding town halls. We're trying to get engaged. We're working on legislation that is really like addressing things that haven't been addressed in the city. So I think a lot of folks that will be running for office will already have a track record of legislation that they pass. But, you know, it's politics. So as it gets closer, I do expect people probably to make sure if they didn't get something done before their election come up, that they make sure that that comes to the Board of Aldermen.
And we'll be right back after this quick break. And we're back on Politically Speaking with 14th Ward Alderman Rasheen Aldridge. I'm Rachel Lippman. My co-host is Jason Rosenbaum. Alders go back into session on Friday. How did you spend your summer break?
I can't say it was a summer break because I was working. And that's one thing that is very different from, like I say, the state and local level is one thing that I did when I was running for office, I gave everyone my cell phone number if it was in person or it was on all my mailers. So throughout this summer break, because, you know, we went into the Board of Aldermen very quickly after the election and there was no moment to just take a break. So I really took this moment to engage with residents that I haven't been able to engage with since I've been at the board, held several town halls, trying to hear from constituents to figure out what is the legislation that we need to be working on. We have some big issues like the blight bill that's coming down in the NGA area. So it really wasn't a break, but it was time well spent of being able to reconnect with residents since the campaign, which I wasn't able to since being at the Board of Aldermen because things have just got busy and trying to learn that whole system down there.
It's literally 2 weeks between election and swearing in. There is not a long ramp up there
no,
at all.
And there's no blueprint to how to do it. So when you get in, it's just like, all right, you're in and constituents are calling you already. They're calling you even before you get in office talking about the tree is down. It's like, well, who's at forestry? Who's a commissioner? You know, like stuff like the constituent service things that are important. But no break during the summer break. I'm sure I'll try to take one around March around my 30th birthday, though.
There you go. St. Louis County, St. Charles County are both considering property tax relief for senior citizens using state legislation that passed during the last session. Is this something that the city of St. Louis will and should consider?
I think we are already considering it. I know there's a bill Alderwoman Spencer is carrying that's considering it. And then I think there may be another bill because I think some people are looking at her legislation and saying it's not really mirroring exactly what the state statute ordinance says. I know that she is trying to look at it to make sure it really affects our most vulnerable community. I think that's a conversation that, you know, this is where we need to pull in our director, Paul Payne. He's a conservative person with numbers, but if we're going to do property tax freezes, which I think in some cases should be doable, especially for seniors or people on fixed incomes, what does that look like for our budget, especially if we may lose the earnings tax as we're still in that process and that fight?
But I'm just saying I sat in the St. Louis County version of this, and the reason that it got voted down is there is no means test. It would affect everybody who's a senior, even somebody that lives on one of those giant mansions.
And that's a flaw, a gap in the state enabling legislation, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And that even the proponents of it, like Councilman Mark Harder and somebody who voted for it, like Councilman Ernie Trakas, acknowledged that that was not available.
And I know that was one of Alderwoman Spencer's concerns that she's trying to address is like making sure that this does not affect like seniors that, like you say, live in a mansion that's very well off that can be able to pay their property tax. But is there a section of our population that could truly benefit from it? And how can we try to put that in writing that could ease around potentially the state legislation or the state, what the state passed, because it is a mess?
I'm going to go back to something that you said in the prior conversation about guns, and that was the Board of Aldermen sending a message to Jefferson City that we have a space to legislate. Megan Green mentioned in an address to Local Progress over the weekend, she also wants to try and carve out space in areas of tenants' rights and et cetera. Is that the Board of Aldermen's role to send a message to Jefferson City, or is it to get city services functioning, recycling, trash, grass mowing, vacant building demolition? Like, what's the role of the Board of Aldermen?
I think it's both. I feel like historically the Board of Aldermen, previous legislation, they always focus on just stop signs and speed humps and big development bills. I think it's, we can walk and chew gum. I think it is making sure we do focus on city services, making sure when we're looking at the budget, as the Board of Aldermen have that ability to do, is where is the gaps to make sure that, like you say, trash is being picked up properly, to make sure that all these potholes that, we all constantly hit when you're driving throughout the city, how do we make sure that the streets are is well funded. But I think the role of the Board of Aldermen is to pass legislation. We are legislators, and I think for so long we've moved away from that and we focus solely on constituent services. I think it's, we have to do both. And I think, when you have Jefferson City constantly trying to tell St. Louis what to do, like now they want to again attack the earnings tax, it is also our role as a municipality, which is a big economic engine for this state, to say, no, this is what we want to see done in our city, because we know our city. We're not the rural Republicans that are just coming down to St. Louis for a Cardinals game or a Blues game. Like, we live here. We have to deal with the gunshots. We have to deal with the violence. We have to deal with the trauma. And we have a better solution of addressing those needs. So I think it is passing legislation to let Jeff City know this is what we want to see, and also doing stuff at the ballot, which I know things are moving that hopefully will allow municipalities to do certain ordinance and legislation. But it's also focusing on constituent services. It's a mix of both, and we have to definitely stay focused on the legislation that impacts people's lives as well.
How would you like to see the settlement over the departure of the St. Louis Rams spent?
That's a good question. It's a lot of money. So what I've been doing is I've had 3 town halls just in the little time that I've been there. And at the last one, the Board of Aldermen just opened up this really cool kind of resident interaction website where residents can get feedback on what they want to see. So first, I would love to continue to engage on the 14th to figure out what are the needs. And that's different. Like I said, I got from downtown and North St. Louis. What are the needs that people want to see? I think the biggest thing that we need to do with it is, in my opinion, I think we can use a lot of that money for infrastructure as well as the 911 system. I know that we got some money from the state. I know that the city has committed some money. But, going back, public safety is people number one issue. And to be honest, our 911 system is a hotmess.com. You call 911 and you sit online for a long time, or even if you get somebody, you may get a voicemail. So I think really putting a lot of that money to speeding up that 911 system would be important. And I think also we need not to spend it all right now. We can put some in endowment where the city can continue to generate money on it. We need to come up with a plan and not just throw this money out there off of just all the ideas that people are saying. I think we need to be strategic about it, because it's unlike the ARPA money. We don't have time on this, or we can be able to recuperate more money if we put it in a fund where it can generate more money.
How are you making sure that all of your residents, maybe not those who are, as much online as we are, who aren't, all of them give their input, not just those who are more civically involved?
So outside of putting it on my social media and Twitter, I also do a weekly newsletter. When I go out to town halls, people that have emails, I have them sign up for the newsletter that I send out every biweekly. I try to do weekly, but it's kind of busy, so it's biweekly, which that's been included. At the recent town halls, I printed off a QR code so that people can scan it. We now have these cool little business cards that we got from the Board of Aldermen. So when I'm out in the community, I'm passing out the business cards where people can either do a paper survey, or they can either get that from the board or contact the alder person to get it, and we will manually put it in, or be able to do that QR code. So really meeting people where they are. In the next few days, I'm going to be going on my senior tour, what I call going to each senior building in the ward, knowing that they can't get out in the ward or get out to some of these meetings, maybe due to access of transportation or their health conditions. So I'll be bringing these QR codes and business cards and paper surveys directly to them so that their input can also be part of it. Because I do think, like you say, it's important that we touch people that do not have internet access. And it's a lot of people out there that's not in the know, that may not follow certain Facebook or Twitter pages.
Or just aren't on Facebook or Twitter, and you know what?
Or
good
that,
for them.
Or,
good for
or
them.
X. We keep saying Twitter.
It's
X.
Twitter. You know what? We're St. Louis. It's Twitter.
There
Come
we
on.
Go. It's like Breco.
So let's switch gears to politics. You have been a fairly vocal surrogate for Lucas Kunta's Senate bid. In fact, that's where I saw you when you said, hey, I want to come on this show. You supported him last time. Is that correct?
Yeah, I supported him when he ran for U.S. Senate last go round.
So why did you continue? Why have you decided to support him for round two?
You know, I support those that have truly been there for me and people that I believe in their mission and their values. And one thing that really excited me about Lucas was when he first ran, and I was at first leaning toward Spencer, you know, being in the progressive
wing. Spencer Toter.
Spencer Toter, not
yeah.
Kara Spencer. There's a lot of Spencers at play
Yeah,
here.
Spencer Toter. But I was leaning towards him. But, you know, when I heard Lucas and some of the issues that he was standing on, one thing is our Democratic Party is – we need excitement, you know, and he brings that excitement. He gets you kind of fired up. I was joking with him. I was like, you give me an Obama vibe, you know, because he when he was out there speaking, he came to Old North or we knocked doors in North St. Louis, the way that he would just connect with people. You know, he wasn't afraid, no matter him being a white male in North St. Louis, he wasn't afraid to have those hard conversations. He come from a different walk of life with similar issues of living in Jeff City, family that, you know, didn't have much. You know, family also struggled to keep food on the table. We had mom and dad, but was going through some health issues with his sister, which they wasn't sure how they was going to pay for. So he's just genuine. And I think he, you know, he knows what he's talking about. And I believe that he actually believe in what he's talking about.
But similar to 2022, there are now two other candidates in the race, Wesley Bell and Carla May. Do you think the fact that those two people jumped in signals that there's unease with this possibility that Kuntz could be the nominee against Josh Hawley?
I don't think so. And I have the ultimate level of respect for Senator May and also attorney Wesley Bell. However, I think, you know, I really think the moderate or the Democratic establishment really got behind Trudy Bush Valentine last go around and kind of closed the doors for others to get in, which Lucas had already got in. So if they wanted to, I think it was probably people telling them, hey, get out. And I think this was an opportunity. I know Senator May was thinking about it, but as I spoke with her, you know, her time in Jeff City and trying to get budget stuff done, it wasn't the right timing. So I think it was the right timing for her. But what I do believe is I think Lucas has been able to set up a machine and really set the foundation for him to be able to win all the work that he's done off his last run.
Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You'll be able to find this episode and previous ones at stlpr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, so long.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.